Welcome to that fresh radio piece at WMUC-FM College Park. This is James, and we got Christian in the studio with me.
Yo!
Yeah, we're just getting started for you guys. Got the 7 to 9 shift this morning. Yeah, we got a great show. Interview with the Chesapeake Bay Foundation. Another interview with True Vote Maryland. And yeah, got a lot of stuff in between and after, but we're going to get started with a little headlines. Let's hear something.
Yeah, and you can always check out thatfreshradiopiece.com. In case you're thinking about going back to sleep right now, not a problem. Just archive us. You can always download the show. If you want to call into the station, 301-314-8800. Again, 301-314-8800. It's That Fresh Radio Piece. A counterbalance to the fair imbalance. And here's James with some headlines.
Yo, we got a headline from the Post. Police chief fires leader of the union. Falls Church police chief has fired the officer who heads the city's police union aide and has suspended the union's vice president after they publicly discussed problems with their department's ticket quotas and guns. The union leaders noted in 2004 that Falls Church officers were being evaluated based partially on high quotas for writing traffic tickets. They said officers were writing multiple tickets in one traffic stop rather than pursuing more time-consuming matters such as drunk drivers. The police later eliminated ticket quotas in the evaluations. And last year, after reportedly trying to address the matter internally, the union publicly reported that the department's new guns regularly malfunctioned during training. The department has since replaced the guns. But Officer Scott Rhodes, 38, the union president, said he soon was faced with numerous internal violations after his comments were published in the Washington Post. He was fired June 30th. Chief Robert T. Murray provided Rhodes with five reasons for the firing, all unrelated to Rhodes' public comments. Rhodes said two of the violations were being appealed. One was found to be baseless by internal affairs, and two were never investigated. Officer Marcus Bristol, 37, was suspended with pay on May 23rd. He said he wasn't sure why he had not been provided any charges. Bristol said, "We brought some issues to the public's attention, which embarrassed the city, and now they're coming right after us to destroy us." And moving on, got a headline from Diamondback right here on campus. Students and candidates are hopeful this year's election will draw more student voters than usual, following the county's Board of Elections decision last month to bring the precinct's polling place onto the campus. The Prince George's County Board of Elections agreed unanimously last month to relocate the precinct 2102 polling place from the College Park Community Center to Ritchie Coliseum. The switch will impact many students living off campus, including those who live in fraternities and sororities who reside within that precinct. State Senator John Gianetti said the community center was one of the two most poorly attended polling places in the county. The first was the Stamp Student Union, which was under construction at the time of the last election. He says he hopes moving the polling place from the community center on Pierce Avenue will help bolster student voting. Switching the polling place is potentially a problem because it takes people a while to realize it's moved, said Mark Lopez, research director at the Center for Information and Research on Civic Learning and Engagement. Lopez says he expects to see a decrease in voter turnout for at least 2 years after the change, but in a decade, there'll be no significant impact on turnout. And Christian, follow me up with some local headlines.
Yes, I can. Start things off from the Diamondback. A triple homicide may have gang ties. Prince George's County Police have identified the neighborhood as one of the several hot spots for violence within the county. And police are investigating whether the shooting was connected to gang activity. Three men were fatally shot and a fourth wounded recently in Hyattsville. It is the third deadly incident in the past year within just a few miles of the campus that police have investigated as gang-related. On October 9th, two men were murdered on Quintana Street in Riverdale as they sat in their cars. Wow. And in August, multiple throat slittings led to deaths in Langley Park in a parking lot less than 3 miles away. Initial reports from police indicated Friday's slayings may be gang-related because witness accounts claim the gunman yelled, "Mara Salvatrucha," the name of the El Salvadoran gang also known as MS-13. Police now question the validity of these allegations. Quote, we have not been able to definitely confirm whether or not the gunmen were gang members, although that is what was initially reported, end quote. They also added that police determined during interviews with victims' relatives that none were affiliated or members of a gang. The Washington Post reported, however, that MS-13 may have been trying to shake down the apartment complex's residents, or that the shooting may have been related to a dispute about a woman. Police have not made any arrests or named any suspects, and police are encouraging anyone with information to come forward. Also, from the Washington Post, Ford might be stripped of some roles. A U.S. Senate committee has approved legislation that would require the D.C. School Board to relinquish its state-level functions, including its handling of millions of dollars in federal funds and its oversight of reform efforts for low-performing schools. The measure's sponsor says she was partially motivated by an April federal declaration that the school system was at, quote, high risk, unquote, of mismanaging funds. The measure calls for the school board, the D.C. Council, and the mayor to work together to develop and pass legislation that would transfer those functions to another entity, a new authority, or perhaps an existing agency, such as the State Education Office, which is under the mayor's office. The Senate Appropriations Committee on Thursday added the provision to the D.C. spending bill for fiscal year 2007, which is scheduled to reach the Senate floor this fall. Mayor Anthony Williams and several board members are backing the idea. Unlike other systems around the country, the D.C. school system operates as both a local and a state education agency. Both roles are overseen by the school board and Superintendent Clifford Janey and involve many of the same administrators. And that's it for our local headlines. But I think we've got some international ones James going to come out with you.
Yeah, from the BBC. A senior mediator at peace talks between the Ugandan government and rebels say he is confident they will reach a deal, despite initial problems. Salva Kiir, president of the Southern Sudan's government, said both sides pledged to negotiate, quote, in good faith. The Lord's Resistance Army rebels have been tabling their demands in Juba on the fourth day of talks. Last week, Uganda extended a deadline for thrashing out a peace deal in Juba in southern Sudan to 12th of September. We want compensation for losses, we want a program of national reconciliation and national unity, and we want a new national army, LRA spokesman Obwana Oweni told the BBC. The historic talks in southern Sudan had a difficult start when rebels accused the government of corruption and threatened to continue fighting. Thousands have died in the two-decade conflict between the LRA and the government, and some 2 million have been forced to flee their homes. The rebels, who have been promised an amnesty, have not sent their top leaders to negotiations, but say they are willing to sign a ceasefire. Few of the 17-member delegation have combat experience, and many of them are based abroad. LRA leader Joseph Kony and four of his commanders are wanted for war crimes by the International Criminal Court. Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni has offered them a full and guaranteed amnesty as long as they remain renounce violence. And from The Independent and The Guardian, two headlines about the Amazon. Huge soy farms financed by Cargill, the largest privately owned company in the world, are the rainforest's new worst enemy. The Amazon Basin is home to 1 in 10 of the world's animals and 15% of the world's land-based plant species. It holds more than half of the world's fresh water, and its vast forests act as the largest carbon sink on the planet, providing a vital check on the greenhouse effect. Brazil has overtaken the United States as the world's leading exporter of soya. The protein-rich bean has become a profitable link in the processed food chain, and 80% of the world production is fed to livestock. Brazilian soya beans are feeding Europe's growing hunger for cheap meat substitutes and have overtaken logging and cattle ranching as the main engine of deforestation. Last year, Brazil produced more than 50 million tons of soya across nearly 56 acres of fields. Also last year, the worst drought in more than a century hit the Amazon basin, drying up tributaries more than a mile wide and prompting Brazil to declare a state of emergency across the entire region. Already there are signs that the extreme conditions of last year are returning. In the Acre region, close to Brazil's border with Bolivia and Peru, where last year's drought began, sandbanks have already started appearing in rivers where they are normally, which are normally larger than any of their European counterparts. Brazil's environment minister, Marina da Silva, said the drought was linked to record sea temperatures in the southwest Atlantic and Gulf of Mexico that has also contributed to last year's record Atlantic hurricane season. But the destruction of the rainforest by illegal loggers has also been named as the cause, as rivers become choked with silt swept away from the denuded land. And, Christian, got some international headlines.
Yo, but I'm gonna let my buddy Jeremy get a 1 minute plug in, so here he goes.
What's up, the world in College Park? Listen to a good show. It's Jeremy. Tomorrow morning, what are you doing right around this time? And 70 minutes before this and 39 minutes after this. That's right. Listening to Wednesday Morning Wake Up with Jeremy. That's me. Got a really, really effing awesome playlist. I can say that, right? Anyway, it's going to be a really good playlist. I'm trying to think of a story, but I don't know. It might not. But where's my cue music, dude?
Yo, man, like... We got a show to run, sorry, like, you came at the wrong time. I thought you come at the top of the second hour, man.
Dude, man, I told you last night.
Son, that wasn't me at the computer.
Well, the message got to get delivered.
Anyways, we try to be as accommodating as possible. I guess some people aren't grateful for their 1 minute that we do allow them.
I think some people don't appreciate that they go 20 minutes out of their way to come here to support their friends.
I think, yeah.
When are you guys coming on my show, by the way? Special guests?
We can dispute further things after the show.
I could book you anytime. Anytime.
And keep that in mind if you'd like to book Jeremy on your show. In the meantime,
interviews are being scheduled.
In the meantime, however, I got a quick international special report coming up. We all have heard, I'm sure, about what's going on with Israel, Lebanon, and the Gaza Strip. And I think there's been so much going on that it's just a bit confusing for us at times. So I'd like to do a recap of what's going on. So, start things off. On Wednesday, July 12th, Hezbollah fighters based in southern Lebanon launched rockets across the border with Israel, targeting the town of Shlomi, an outpost in the Sheba Farms area. In a cross-border raid, guerrillas seized two Israeli soldiers before retreating back into Lebanon, insisting on a prisoner exchange and warning against confrontation. Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert describes the capture of the soldiers as an act of war. In his response, Israeli planes bomb Hezbollah positions in southern Lebanon and troops cross into southern Lebanon for the first time since the military withdrawal of 2000. However, the troops encounter heavy resistance. 8 are killed and 2 others are injured during the fighting with Hezbollah. Israel calls up reserve troops as it pledges a swift and large-scale response to Hezbollah attack. On Thursday, July 13th, after a night of Israeli air raids across southern Lebanon, Israeli jets strike the runways at Beirut's international airport in the morning, forcing the airport to close. Reports emerge of significant numbers of civilian casualties in Lebanese towns and villages close to Israeli targets, with at least 35 people reported killed. As Israel announces on-air and sea blockade of Lebanon, insisting that Hezbollah will not be allowed to return to its former position along the international border, world powers react to the escalating crisis. The U.S. president defends Israel's right to defend itself from attack, but France, Russia, and the EU are all critical of a, quote, disproportionate, end quote, use of force. As night falls, a rocket hits Israel's third city, Haifa, although Hezbollah denies responsibility. On Friday, July 14th, Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah promises, quote, open war, end quote, against Israel after his offices in Beirut are bombed. The strikes are part of Israel's ongoing operation against targets across Lebanon. Bridges, roads, and fuel depots are hit with new strikes against Beirut Airport. The number of Lebanese civilians killed in the strikes rises above 50, and the crisis continues to concern international powers. The UN Security Council, in an emergency meeting, calls for an end to the Israeli operation, saying it is causing the death of innocent civilians. Iran's president warns that any Israeli attack on Syria, seen as a sponsor of Hezbollah, will provoke a fierce response. On Saturday, July 15th, Israel expands its strikes in Lebanon, attacking a large number of targets, including for the first time, the northern port city of Tripoli. 18 Lebanese fleeing a village are killed when their vehicles are struck with missiles on the road to the southern city of Tyre. The headquarters of Hezbollah are destroyed in southern Beirut. Hezbollah responds by firing rockets onto the town of Tiberias in its deepest attack into Israel so far. Israel recovers the body of one of four sailors missing after Hezbollah strike on a Navy vessel off the Lebanese coast. Arab League Secretary General Amr Moussa says the Middle East peace process is dead and calls on the Security Council to tackle the issues. Lebanon's Prime Minister says his country is a, quote, disaster zone, end quote, and calls for international help. And speaking ahead of the G8 meeting in St. Petersburg, Russia, U.S. President George Bush blames Hezbollah for the crisis and urges Syria to put pressure on the militants. But his host, Russian President Vladimir Putin, is more critical of Israel's massive bombing campaign, saying that, quote, the use of force should be balanced, end quote. On Sunday, July 16th, Israeli air raids kill at least 23 people in southern Lebanon. 7 Canadians of Lebanese origin are killed, and Hezbollah rockets kill 8 Israelis in the coastal city of Haifa in the worst attack on Israel since the fighting started. People living as far south as Tel Aviv are told to be on alert. Prime Minister Ehud Olmert of Israel says the Haifa attack will have, quote, far-reaching consequences, end quote. While Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah says the battle against Israel is, quote, just at the beginning, end quote. And leaders of the G8 nations meeting in St. Petersburg blame extremist forces for the crisis, but call on Israel to end military operations. And finally, yesterday on July 17th, Monday, Israel extends its airstrikes to the north, killing at least 15 people in and around Tripoli, Lebanon's second largest city. Other targets include the nearby port of Abdeh, where 9 Lebanese soldiers died, the capital Beirut, and the eastern city of Baalbek. 10 people reportedly killed driving across a bridge south of Beirut as an Israeli missile strike. In Israel, Prime Minister Ehud Olmert says attacks will go on until 2 captured Israeli soldiers are freed. Hezbollah is disarmed and the Lebanese army controls the south. UN Chief Kofi Annan and UK Prime Minister Tony Blair suggest sending an international force in Lebanon to halt the Hezbollah attacks, but Israel says it is too soon to consider such a move. And President Bush is caught on tape using an expletive as he discusses the crisis with Blair, suggesting that Syria must put pressure on Hezbollah to end the fighting. The international community steps up its evacuation of foreigners from Beirut as thousands of Lebanese flee their homes. And that is the end of the timeline, and I'd like to credit the BBC for supplying that. And for now, I think we're going to get into a little...
Something wrong with me, guess I don't fit in. No one wants to touch it, no one knows where to begin. I just want more than one membership to more than one club, cause I owe my life to the people that I love. He looks me up and down like he knows the time it is, like he's got my number, like he thinks it's his. He says call me Mr. Franco, if there's anything I can do, I say it's Mr. the Franco Dio. And their eyes are all asking, are you in or are you out? And I think, oh my, what is this about? I mean, tonight you can't put me up on any shelf, cause I came here alone, and I'm gonna leave by myself. I just wanna show you days the line I walk it turns out to be straight. Other days the line it tends to deviate, and I've got no criteria for sex or race. I just wanna hear your voice, I just wanna see your face. And she walks me up and down like she thinks that I'm mature, like she's got my number, like it belongs to her. And she says, call me Mr. Franco if there's anything I can do. And I say, you know, I got spots, did you know I had stripes to walk? Me, I guess I don't fit in. No one wants to touch it, no one knows where to begin. I just want more than one membership to more than one club, cause I owe my life to the people that I love.
Hey, we're so that fresh radio piece. We're gonna get back in here with some stats. I'll start it off. Well, yeah, got a little bit of Stevie Wonder in the background. And yeah, this is from the New York Times. The Federal Education Department filed a report which compared 4th and 8th grade reading and math scores from nearly 7,000 public schools and more than 530 private schools in 2003. Found that children attending public schools generally do as well as or better than comparable children in private schools. And it also found that conservative Christian schools lagged significantly behind public schools when it came to 8th grade math. Christian, you got some stats right there?
Yeah, I'd like to go back to the subject of what's going on in the Middle East and bring these statistics to you that come from Dr. Salman Abu Sita, the Palestine Land Society, UN Relief and Works Agency, among others. And so, to get things started, Palestinian refugees represent today the longest-suffering and largest refugee population in the world. In 2005, there were approximately 7.2 million Palestinian refugees, equivalent to 74% of the entire Palestinian population, which is estimated at 9.7 million worldwide. The breakdown of the refugee population is as follows. During the creation of Israel in 1948, approximately 750,000 Palestinians were forced to become refugees. Together with their descendants, more than 4.3 million of these refugees are today registered with the UN, while over 1.7 million are not. According to the UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestinian Refugees, one-third of the registered refugees live in 59 UN-run camps in Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, the West Bank, and the Gaza Strip. The majority of the rest live in and around cities in the West Bank and Gaza Strip and of neighboring countries. Approximately 32,000 Palestinians became internally displaced in 1948. Today, these refugees number approximately 355,000 persons. Despite the fact that they were issued Israeli citizenship, Israel denied these refugees their right to return to their homes or villages. And when the West Bank and Gaza Strip were occupied in 67, the UN reported that approximately 200,000 Palestinians fled their homes. These 1967 refugees and their descendants today number about 834,000 persons. And finally, as a result of home demolitions, revocation of residency rights, and construction of illegal settlements on land, at least 57,000 Palestinians have become displaced in the occupied West Bank. This number includes 15,000 persons who have been displaced by the construction of Israel's wall. And from there, we'd like to get into our media segment. James can introduce us as he found this.
Yeah, I got this on Media Matters, and it's concerning hate in the media. In America today, dozens of conservative pundits make their living by being hateful. The media uses these pundits, such as Ann Coulter, Glenn Beck, and Melanie Morgan, to provide knee-jerk, right-wing commentary and to create controversy. These pundits thrive in the role of professional hate merchants, enhancing their name recognition and reaping financial windfalls from book sales. The fact that these right-wing pundits, who have called for the execution of public officials and others, are given a platform in the major media is completely unprecedented. And, yeah, the Media Matter sent out a petition online, trying to get people to fight against this. And they also had this clip of Ann Coulter they compiled that we're going to play for you pretty soon.
Yeah, I just like to say that this pretty much summarizes the kind of radio, television, media in general that we do not need in this world. Here we go.
I'm not blaming the Democrats for 9/11 alone. I'm blaming them also for the Cole bombing, for the embassy bombings, for 20 years of attacks that have not been stopped. Liberalism is a religion. It is just not God-based. It is precisely in opposition, the opposition party to God. This is a party that supports killing, lying, adultery, thievery, envy.
That's ridiculous.
And they're going to call, I mean, their platform is violating the Ten Commandments.
We were thinking of
the Ten Commandments one by one. And they're talking about evil. The left keeps using human shields to promote its half-baked liberal bromides.
This women did not seek their celebrity status. They are not trying to hang on to 15 minutes of fame.
They didn't seek to be celebrity.
Did they just trip into that vanity fair photo?
They would not give this up to get their husbands back.
I don't know. Can't read into their hearts, but it isn't as obvious to me as it apparently is to you.
They're you don't think so?
And you've got to
be kidding me.
Big celebrities.
Laura, you can respond to her.
Do I have to kill my mother so I can be a victim too?
But these women are not liberal.
And then John Murtha, and you said the reason soldiers invented fragging. You've taken a lot of heat for that. In context, these are just off the top of your head remarks regarding a whole list of people. What's been your reaction to the criticism that you've taken for the Murtha comment?
I wasn't aware I had taken criticism, but I'm glad some of my best lines are getting out.
You don't have any reservations about that line?
No.
You're not suggesting that anybody should off John Murtha.
It is what it is.
You know, aren't liberals or far left people supposed to be champions of freedom of speech? Isn't that what the ACLU is all about?
No, of course not. They're Nazi bloc watchers. This is what they're good at.
They're Nazi what?
Bloc watchers. You know, they tattle on their parents. Turn them into the Nazis. They're little Nazi watchers.
Want you on CNN. You're calling them Nazis. Would Jesus sanction a book that belittles and ridicules a large segment of the American population?
Yes. I would like a United States military capable of winning wars, which will not involve sending girls to do fighting. Yeah, I think it's appalling that these women are in mud wrestling, but I think it's appalling that they're in the military. They need us. They better hope the United States doesn't roll over one night and crush them. They are lucky we allow them to exist on the same continent.
You can quote anything I've said back to me and ask me if I have reservations, if I would have done it differently, if I would have said it differently, do I have any regrets? The answer is no.
And that was, for Media Matters, a few clips of Ann Coulter and some hate speech that we just don't like around these parts. So, to get back into it though, we got a little song from Diego. This is called Optimus Prime. The artist is Khalil Al-Mustafa from the album Counterintelligence. Diego says, enjoy.
I'm not blaming the Democrats for 9/11 alone. I'm blaming...
Whoops. 1 second. Here we go.
Optimus Prime is a black man. This poem is for all those cool black cartoon characters that were never fully acknowledged. Like Heathcliff and Friends, Panto from the Thundercats, and the Pink Panther, rocking shades with that cool ass smoke. For the whole cast of The Lion King, and that joint smoking munchie having pup named Scooby-Doo, who was always bait for the monsters, sacrificed like black characters in scary movies. This poem is for Orko in blackface with a big O on his chest, whose best friend was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed white man named He-Man, Masters of the Universe, who reminded brown children all over the world every day that he had the power. This poem is for Daffy Duck, whose big rubbery lips were always being shot at and smacked around by Elmer Fudd and Leo Yosemite Sam, a plantation owner who just so happened to look like the General Lee. This poem is for Speedy Gonzalez, the Mexican mouse, quickly running back and forth across the border to steal chunks of American cheese. For Wile E. Coyote, who chased the Roadrunner as if he were the American dream. Acme and IKEA will not save you, brother. This poem is for the missing Africans and Tarzan, Seinfeld, and Friends. For Mr. T, a black man still in chains. For King Kong, who was destroyed for trying to date a white woman. This poem is for Fred Sam for dealing with America's junk. For James and Florida Evans for showing us that although we was poor, good times was what's happening in the ghetto. Before the Jeffersons moved on up and the Cosbys moved into Brooklyn, as if Reaganomics had finally trickled down to the hood. This poem is because they killed the father from Good Times. Damn, damn, and damn if they replace him with the Papadopoulos and Philip Drummond. This poem is because they beat Kunta Kinte until he said his name was Jordy. Took his sight. Named Megatron, leader of the Decepticons. A gang of robots who used up all the resources on their planet and decided to go from planet to planet, stealing all of the natural resources.
Like any parent, I worry about the health of our nation's children. Never before have so many American kids been overweight and at risk for diabetes, heart disease, and other serious health problems. The good news is that the right foods can help our kids stay healthy. Fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and other low-fat vegetarian foods will protect your kids as they grow and keep the whole family healthy at the same time. For a free booklet packed with delicious recipes and nutrition tips, call 1-877-685-KIDS or visit www.kidsgethealthy.org. PCRM is a nonprofit organization of doctors and laypersons working together to promote preventive medicine, especially good nutrition, and more ethical research.
Is WMUC-FM College Park. We'd like to ask you guys come out, check out WMUC. They got the website at WMUCradio.com. They have all their archives and playlists, and you can just check it out. There's a lot of information on there. It's great. You can also check them out on MySpace with MySpace/WMUC or MySpace/Third Rail Radio, which happens Sunday nights. Got some live music here in the studio. And see what else we got. Live Journal, Facebook, Friendster. Just check it out. WMC, you're great people. Helped us out a lot. And yeah, and we are That Fresh Radio piece. Chris, you want to tell a little bit of audience about that?
Yeah, you should come to the website, thatfreshradiopiece.com. We've got archives. We've got now a calendar to organize our community plugs a little better. You can read a little bit about us, who we've had on the show. We also have a media section that we're working on, which should be very informative. We've got tons of links from people who have been on the show and organizations, as well as media links to get you started on the track to being media literate. And there's plenty on there, and we hope you check it out. It's thatfreshradiopiece.com, a counterbalance to the fair imbalance. So, let's finish our headlines for the day. We got national, and I think James can start that off.
Sure. I got BBC headline. Halliburton's lucrative logistics contract with the U.S. Army is to come to an end, the military has said. The Army said it would seek new bidders for the multi-million dollar deal to provide support services to the U.S. troops around the globe. Halliburton, once led by U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney, has recently come under fire for landing expensive, non-competitive government contracts. Reports have suggested the Army may decide to replace its biggest contractor with three firms when the deal ends in September, with a fourth firm signed up to monitor the trio. According to a report in the Washington Post, the Pentagon has decided it no longer wants to place all our eggs in one basket, unquote. By splitting the contracts and offering them to three other companies, the Army believes it will get better value for its money, as well as better accountability and transparency. Senator Byron Dorgan of the Democratic Party said the move has been a long time coming. I believe literally hundreds of millions and probably billions of dollars have been wasted, he told the Senate. And from the LA Times, during a Capitol Hill briefing for an audience mostly of congressional aides, Senator Peter Shoemaker, the Army Chief of Staff, was asked if he thought the U.S. was winning the war. He paused for more than 10 seconds after he was asked the question before venturing, "I think I would answer by telling you I don't think we're losing. The challenge is becoming more complex, and it's going to continue to be," Shoemaker mused. "That's why I'll tell you, I think we're closer to the beginning than we are to the end of all this." The Army's top commander in Iraq, General George W. Casey, Jr., acknowledged this week that the recent increase in sectarian violence in Baghdad might mean the U.S. has to increase the number of soldiers in the Iraqi capital, rather than the long-awaited decrease for which commanders had hoped. Quote, "I think we are making significant progress. I think the challenges continue to come," Shoemaker concluded. "I do not believe that we are losing, but where I think we are in the scale of winning is very difficult, and time is going to tell." And Christian, bring us the last headlines, and the national headlines he's got.
Yes, the last few national headlines, but I'd like for you to enjoy Frank Sinatra really fast.
I did it my way. Yes, there were times I'm sure you knew when I bit off more than I could chew. But through it all, when there was doubt,
I ate it up and spit it out. Alright, let's finish these off real fast, shall we? From the BBC once again. Cheney is sued in a CIA identity case. A former CIA officer whose identity was leaked to the media is suing U.S. Vice President Dick Cheney. Valerie Plame is suing Mr. Cheney, his ex-aide Louis Libby, and presidential advisor Karl Rove, saying they tried to destroy her career. Ms. Plame's name appeared in the media in 2003 after her husband criticized the Bush government over Iraq. A spokesman for Mr. Rove, Mark Corallo, said the allegations were, quote, "utterly without merit," end quote. Mr. Libby has been charged with perjury and obstructing justice in connection with the leak. He has resigned pending trial but denies the charges. It was revealed last month that Mr. Rove would not be charged over the leak. Ms. Plame's name had appeared in an article written by columnist Robert Novak, about a week after her husband, ex-U.S. Ambassador Joseph Wilson, said in the New York Times that the government had twisted intelligence to go to the war in Iraq. The CIA had sent Mr. Wilson to Niger in 2002 to find out whether then Iraqi President Saddam Hussein was trying to buy uranium from the African country. Mr. Wilson reported that there was no truth in the claim, but it still appeared in George W. Bush's 2003 State of the Union address. The couple say the officials violated their constitutional privacy rights in order to punish Mr. Wilson for his comments. But on Wednesday, Robert Novak has refused to name the source who gave him Ms. Plame's identity. But on Wednesday, he said Mr. Rove had confirmed her employment when asked. And finally, the road to victory in Iraq is, quote, unclear, unquote, U.S. auditors conclude. Agency France Presse has reported on this. The investigative arm of the U.S. Congress has openly questioned if a victory in Iraq can be achieved without a significant overhaul of George W. Bush's strategy, arguing the outcome of the war was presently unclear. The findings by the Government Accountability Office marked the first time since a nonpartisan U.S. Senate government agency publicly doubted whether the geostrategic undertaking that Bush made the defining element of his presidency could be successful. Quote, it is unclear how the United States will achieve its desired end state in Iraq, given the significant changes in the assumptions underlying the U.S. strategy, unquote, the GAO wrote in its report, unveiled Tuesday at a hearing in the House of Representatives. The review focuses on the national security strategy for Iraq, in Iraq, a glitzy document released by the White House with great fanfare last November. The strategy charted what was described at the time as a sound course for overcoming the Iraqi insurgency and turning the country into the first true democracy around the Arab world. 9 months later, congressional investigators found these high hopes were resting on shaky premises that are quickly melting away. And so that concludes our national headlines for today, and I think we have a special clip of Courtney Dow. I don't know if you remember her. She was back on the show in spring. Good friend of ours. Wonderful lady. And we hope you enjoyed this song from her. James, what was the name? I think it's... Well, she'll announce it, actually. So
Don't Go Back to Sleep.
Yeah, Don't Go Back to Sleep. Yep, that's a message for you all. All right, peace.
This song, it's called Don't Go Back to Sleep. So you might be just waking up and maybe this song is for you. Living
And that was Courtney Dow with what, Don't Go Back to Sleep.
Yeah, that's right.
And so tonight, well, now is our community call-in hour. So if you want to call in the station, it's 301-314-8800. One more time, 301-314-8800. And you have till about, 8 o'clock to call in and speak your mind to everyone on the airwaves. But I guess for now, you want to put on a song? Should we put on Cake or should we put on Blue Oyster Cult?
Put a little Cake.
All right, Cake. Here we go. Going the distance. It's for our buddy out there, Diego, if you're listening, man. Probably not. But when you do on the archives, this is for you.
Reluctantly crouched at the starting line. Engines pumping and thumping in time. The green light flashes. The flags go up. Churning and burning, they yearn for the cup. They deftly maneuver and muscle for rank. Fuel burning fast on an empty tank. Reckless and wild, they pour through the turns. Their prowess is potent and secretly stern. As they speed through the finish, the flags go down. The fans get up and they get out of town. The arena is empty except for one man. Still driving and striving as fast as he can. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's driving and striving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. He's going the distance. He's going for speed. She's all alone. All alone in a time of need. Because he's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and biting and riding on his horse. He's going the distance. No wine, he's haunted by something he cannot define. Bowel-shaking earthquakes of doubt and remorse assail him, impale him with monster truck force. In his mind, he's still driving, still making the grade. She's hoping in time that her memories will fade. Cause he's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and fighting and riding on his horse. The sun has gone down and the moon has come up. And long ago somebody left with the cup. But he's striving and driving and hugging the turns and thinking of someone for whom he still burns. He's going the distance. He's going for speed. She's all alone. All alone in a time of need. Because he's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and biting and riding on his horse. He's racing and pacing and plotting the course. He's fighting and biting and riding on his horse. He's going the distance. He's going for speed.
take my hand. We'll be able to fly. Baby, I'm your man.
What's going on, everybody? WMUC FM, College Park. It's that fresh radio piece, the counterbalance to the fair imbalance. Right now, you're listening to Don't Fear the Reaper, the Blue Oyster Cult. Wow, I keep seeing cult. Before that, we had I Heard It Through the Grapevine by Marvin Gaye. And before that, we had Cakes Going the Distance. Shout out to our buddy Diego. But now, I think I'm going to just switch it up a little because I want to really get this song in. Personal favorite. Classic for all of us, I'm sure. And then from there, we'll be getting into the fresh piece. So stay tuned. We've got a good one coming up. Aight.
What's the matter with you, boy?